to Agents of Smooch. It is time to discuss season two of Bridgertons. After the heat of season one, are we still swooning for the new flirtations and matchups? We reunite our agents to talk about frocks and dancing and who shall marry whom and who is blissfully naive and who knows everything. I am Director Annette Weirstra, and for today's mission, I am joined by Agent Amanda Prescott. Hey, Amanda.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, Bridgerton, so much is going on.
So much.
We also have Agent Trisha Sarker. Hello, Trisha.
Hi, hi. Happy to be here.
Agent Kirsten Gorick. Hello.
Hello. I'm a gentlewoman, and I am honored to be here.
You should be, really. And last but not least, Agent Kathy Campbell. Hello.
Greetings, Director. I come bearing alcohol in teacups because that is how we do it here at Agents of Smooch.
Classy.
Heck that yeah. Is how you do it. I somehow missed the memo that probably should come from my office, and I didn't bring one, and now I'm sad.
Well, a few years ago, we had a girls' day once a month where everyone would bring different alcohol, and then we would pick one of my mom's teacups, and we would have a tea party and play Cards Against Humanity, which was really fun with my generation and my mom's generation of friends. And then we realized that it got really awkward, so we stopped.
I would be here for most of it, but maybe not the Cards for against Humanity.
Yeah.
Season two, Bridgerton, brings us Kate and Edwina Sharma, two sisters who are on a march to find a husband for the younger sister, Edwina. Equally determined to get married is the oldest Bridgerton, Antony. Should he marry the perfect sister or the one who likes to break all the rules? Meanwhile, we also see the Featheringtons struggle to stay afloat, and Lady Whistledown is trying to stay hidden, while Eloise is resisting the marriage mart. So let's start in order that I introduced you and talk about your feelings about this season. Amanda, how are you feeling about season two of Bridgerton?
Overall, I liked season two better than season one, mostly because the dynamic of the relationship is different. The slow burn romance, or the, you know, the we shouldn't do this, but let's do it anyway. I liked that setup better than the coming of age story of season one. Also, I believe that it was great that they integrated the other plot lines into the story, because I feel like a lot of season one was just Simon and Daphne forgetting that these books are, there's a whole lot of other action to come with these other characters that we were introduced in season one. So it's good that season two brought a more ensemble format to the show. So it's not, it's the whole Bridgerton family, it's all the people around them in the town, and you know, it's, there's drama going on in court as well with Queen Charlotte. So I like that we got a bigger picture of the world of Bridgerton in this season, while also getting a good chunk of time to, you know, talk about Kate and Edwina and Antony and their drama, of course.
Mm-hmm. It does feel like a season two, doesn't it? Like, where the world is established, and I think that gives us more time to dig into it a little more. Trisha, how are you feeling? Because you weren't with us last time, so this is your first Bridgerton take with us.
Mm-hmm. Now, I, like, being a South Asian myself, I have to say I did really like the South Asian representation, and I've got a lot of opinions on that, which I'm sure I will share, but you know what? I loved how they played it out, and even in the storyline, and like adding in that Bollywood-esque, slow, pining love story. I really did enjoy that throughout the entire season, and just how they kind of played on culture and showed like different aspects of the South Asian heritage, as well as, again, as Amanda said, building on different characters and getting to know the different characters a little bit better. I thought that was really well done as well.
Yeah, I already cheated and did ask Trisha some questions because sometimes we hang out. Like the Bollywood, because I read an article. I was like, oh, apparently they were. So I was like, so what are they borrowing? And so I'm excited to talk about that because yeah. I think that's really interesting. And it makes sense to try and blend some of those pieces in.
And I also wanted to add, I was a big fan of the soundtrack. Like, I downloaded, the string quartet and the mute. I just thought it was so well done.
I still listen to it daily. It's in my rotation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good. It's so good.
Literally worked to it much of the time. And I was like really excited because now I have season one and season two to play more in the background. Songs. Yeah. Kirsten, what do you think?
I'm going to go a little bit in a different direction. I did enjoy the season. It's Bridgerton. I loved it. I don't know if I liked it as much as the first season, but I agree with Amanda and Trish in that it did expand the world. We got to see some growth in a lot of characters that weren't just the main couple, which I enjoyed. But I just didn't like how they dragged out Antony and Edwina's courtship for so long, like right up until the point that they were supposed to get married. And I think I love a good love triangle. It's one of my favorite tropes. But I think adding in the complication of A, we know who Antony ends up with. That was never a secret. And B, the fact that Kate and Edwina are close friends and best, like sisters, basically, right? Like best friends and sisters. It just made me cringe a lot because I was so worried for their relationship and how this would affect it. And so I just would have, I don't know how the book is. I haven't read the books. I fully admit that. So I don't know if they were different. But I feel like I wanted to see Edwina's world romantically expanded a little, and I would have liked to seen Antony and Kate's, like, I loved the tension of them. I mean, those two have crazy chemistry. There were some great speeches of, like, desire and longing, which I love, but it was so compressed at the end. It was like they were rushing to get through everything in those last two episodes. We didn't even get to see their wedding, and I just, Edwina is such a smart, capable woman, and I did not buy that she would have been so blind to Antony's like serial killer looks of desire for that long. Like, I just did not. I was like, come on, girl, like, open your eyes. So I struggled a little with that, but I did overall, I enjoyed it. That part was a little cringy for me, but I also knew a happy ending was coming, and so that helped.
That, because I that really stressed me out a lot too, but I think we'll put a pin in it and come back to that because I'm curious what everyone thinks about that. Because I believe, if I recall, this is different from the book.
Kind of, yes. Yeah, there are definitely parts of it. So I'm going to be against... Well, okay. So I'm just going to talk and we'll line up and where I am. I did enjoy it because, again, just like Kirsten said, it's Bridgerton. I love the clothing. I love the music. I love the visuals. It's just a beautiful show. All pieces of it are beautiful, including the actors. However, I didn't feel the chemistry between Kate and Antony as consistently and as strongly as I did in the first season. I mean, it was there at moments, but I didn't feel it in every scene in the way that, I mean, even Lord Featherington and Dowager Lady Featherington had more chemistry at some points than Kate and Antony. And I also didn't like how much Edwina was the naive little sister. There would have been so many opportunities to have her not, I mean, you could keep her also, I guess, spoilers for the show, but if you're listening to this and you haven't watched it or whatever, yeah. She was overly naive in a way that I think even, Daphne wasn't, like, overly just a baby until episode 6. I even in my notes I put episode 6 is when Edwina finally becomes a character instead of just a placeholder to be the third wheel in the you know love triangle trope. And yeah, I'm sure we'll get more
well,
into it.
Well, let's start
well
with
what do you think, Annette, before you start? Okay. On the whole thing, like, what are your thoughts on season 2?
Tell us everything.
Yes. I actually really loved it. I'm interested. I'm like, maybe they didn't have chemistry, but they had all the time. But there was moments where they had such good chemistry, I didn't care.
Yeah.
And some of those speeches were outstanding. And I loved Kate a lot. But I have some of the same issues about that everyone's mentioned. But on the whole, like, I've watched it 3 times. So,
yeah. I just finished my second.
So did I. I was like, well, I've watched it twice, but so I could not watch it before we record this, or I could just watch the whole thing in a weekend again. So I liked it.
It's funny because when you watch it an additional time, so the first time I'm just like a part of the story, and the second time I binged it twice, so I like watched it in a one period, like when it came out. I watched it like from the second I was awake to, you know, going to sleep.
I watched it
like,
all in one day. I think we're probably watching it the same day.
At the same time, I'm sure. Yeah. But then I like took a break for a couple hours and I came back and watched it a second time. And so I just finished my third rewatch this like a couple hours ago. And this time I knew the story, I knew the pacing, I knew like what was going to happen, so I could really pay attention to the actors. And that is when I realized that the chemistry was so hot and cold. And I had watched all of the interviews and all of the behind the scenes bits and stuff, because I'm just obsessed with all of that. And the two actors had crazy chemistry when they were themselves at all times. It was just in the show that there are moments where I don't know if it was the writing or the way it was cut and edited and like, or locate, like placement or the choreography or what, but if they were not the only two people in the show, like in the scene, with the exception of like that one scene, well, the wedding and the part after when they're like planning the big event and they're like, you guys have to stay on opposite sides of the dance floor. They didn't have that crackling chemistry that you had like with the bee sting and stuff. And it was really interesting when I realized in the first episode how little chemistry they had. And I was just like, whoa, what did I miss the first 2 times that I saw it?
Let's just build on that. What are other people feeling about that?
I liked what you mentioned about Edwina not building in character until the very end, because that was something I found as well, was the fact that she was there and she was a nice girl. Yeah. And that just so pleasant. And then she didn't actually have a personality until the very end. So that was an interesting point that you put out, that I remember thinking, like, what a nice girl. And that was it.
Well, I love the part where at the end, like when she's angry at Kate for lying about, like, why don't you just tell me about Anthony? And then it's like, but she told you from the beginning that Anthony just was marrying for duty and wasn't in love with her and wasn't in love with any, like he wasn't going to marry for love and all this stuff. And it's like, so Kate. Yeah, she hid her feelings, but she actually was pretty honest about Anthony's motivations the whole time. And Edwina's like, I don't hear it.
And yet, I think it would be... It's so funny because, of course, Edwina's not going to pay attention to the things that her sister says, but she's mad at her sister for lying about her sister's feelings, not her own. Because in her mind, I can imagine that Edwina's like, oh, well, I love him. If he loves no one, I can get him to love me, type of a like a mindset, because, you know, she's living in this fairy tale and this
all
is the way
to fix men.
Because it always works flawlessly. It's such a great way to do things. But the part that I think she was really mad about was the fact that Kate loved him and didn't tell her.
And there's also the added betrayal of the whole family drama, right?
Yeah.
Where Kate didn't, like, she treated her like a child again and was like, I know what's best for you. I've made this deal with your grandparents and didn't tell you about it. And
didn't even tell mom.
Like, no, it's nobody, one thing, right?
If, yeah, it's one thing if they had an agreement with mom and, you know, didn't tell little sister, but, like, nobody knew. And and Kate comes in and just is, like, steamrolling the whole plan so that Kate could live as a spinster and be fine.
Yes, she'll be happy. It's fine. She and Anthony both have this, like, I don't want to say savior complex, but they take a lot on. And in Anthony's case, I mean, his father died young and he's the Viscount and he doesn't have a choice. But, you know, they burden themselves a lot, right? And they don't like to talk about it in a very British way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually like that they provided that backstory of Anthony losing his father. I would have liked to have seen them give a similar depth of motivation for Kate, because her motivation didn't feel as strong because we didn't see that story. So it's like, it would have been nice to see.
Well, and you didn't even hear it. Like, even if you didn't see it, because of course, you know, the Bridgerton dad is going to be a more important character throughout all of the episodes. Like, that makes sense. But talk more about who the father was. Like, we know that mom ran away with him, but we didn't really learn anything about Kate's mother other than she gave bracelets and died. Like, that's
and read to her during monsoon season,
right.
Like, yeah, you get like little breadcrumbs and that's it,
right? You know, the personality of a lamp, basically, and just hanging out. One thing I did miss about Anthony in the books was this mindset that, oh, I can't do anything better than my father. Like, I can't, I, you know, I'm like this whole idea of, oh, my father was the best person in the world. And of course he deserved to love, but I'm not as good as him, so I'm not going to have love, so I don't leave somebody broken as much. Like, there was definitely that layer there, but it didn't seem as deeply ingrained in the story as it was in the books, which obviously I get, you know, adaptations, you can't blah, 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 blah. But I would have liked to have a little bit more, especially later on, because you meet him and you have this deep, like, moment of, oh my gosh, of course he misses his dad and this obligations that he has for the family, but then it's just kind of like gone. Like, it doesn't necessarily matter as much.
I wanted to go back to one of your earlier points, actually. I think the whole absence of Kate and Edwina's story bothered me more because the season overall doesn't really address. We have these Southeastern sisters here. We have all these other people of color. The thing is, what is going on politically in India? And that's a huge question mark.
Right. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't to the matter. Story. I guess.
It's not romantic.
Yeah, true. But I also feel like we would have, even if they didn't want to deal with the politics or like just make, you know, if they didn't want to deal with like East India Company or whatever, like, just at least have some kind of motivation. We see all this backstory for Anthony. We don't really see the same. We feel there's emotion there, but we don't really see it. Like, it wasn't even a flashback of, like, you know, maybe them as kids walking around or something. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Like, and you could even film it, like, in a way where I get anyone want to film it in India, right? So, like, just something, like, in a room or something. At least we could see, like, what was going on. And same thing with the mother, like, with Kate's mother.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of things, even if it was a conversation, like remember when, like, it didn't feel, I mean, yeah, the historical disconnect was one thing, but I'm like, you could even just have a little bit more about, because let's do, like, to explain kind of why Edwina is the way she is, because I feel like some people misread her age. Like, they thought that she was older than she really was. Like, she's only, like, 17, 18 years old. So, yeah, there is a certain... Yeah, and also, Anthony's probably not like the other men that have maybe approached her back home. You know, like, there's different courtship traditional. Like, there is a bit... And Edwina was missing some of those signals because, again, like, she's not used to how the Tom acts. So, yeah, it all that backstory would have helped, I think, maybe make Edwina less of a third wheel at times.
especially mm-hmm. since we got so much backstory in season one, mm-hmm. you really developed all both sides of the characters in a way that you didn't really have in this. I mean, we spent more time with the Featheringtons, really, than with Kate and Edwina's, well, with Edwina's mom.
We know all about their financial ruin. We know very little about the Sharmas. Like, I assume it's because their father died, and therefore it put them in a precarious financial position, but...
Well, and he was a clerk, so he wasn't a wealthy person. So they were starting, like, she basically left the family fortune. But mm-hmm. then, I'm assuming when he died, but this is assuming...
Exactly.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah. We just know that Kate was desperate enough to reach out to these grandparents that aren't even hers and ask for help.
But what I found was really interesting and weird and didn't make sense about this whole thing. And they, again, like, historically, things don't line up, as you mentioned. But also the fact that when it comes to, like, what culture, what ethnicity is... Are the Sharmas from? Like, it just seemed like, yes, they're South Asian, we get that, but they built these characters with such a mashup of different Indian cultures. They're supposed to be Marathi, is something that they mention, and then when Kate talks about the languages that Edwina knows, she mentions Hindustani. Hindustani's not a language. It's a type of people. It's like saying, I'm Indian. And I speak Indian. So that was really weird. But then also the fact that, like, the name Sharma itself, that's a North Indian name. And then the fact that Kate calls Edwina Bon, which is Bengali, and that's East Indian. And that's actually something that my brother calls me. So, I mean, hearing it means little sister. So hearing it was like, yes, that's me. So I really loved that. But the fact that, like, okay, so that's Bengali. And then Edwina calls her dad Appa, which is South Indian. So it's just like a mishmash of different, like, Indian pieces and languages that they put together.
Like someone Googled.
Yeah.
What is pet Indian names for little sister and whatever it came up. I wonder.
Exactly. So that I found really strange. And then I wonder if, like, they don't have, like, a history in India because they couldn't decide what it should be.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. I wrote an article about, like, the representation side of it. I mean, what it sounds like they did on purpose, because they did have an advisor for the Indian history. I think what they wanted to do was to make it about, they wanted to make it a pan-Indian experience without IDing too much into one thing. I think because of the fact is they wanted to avoid the whole colonialism question, because if you decide, okay, she's Marathi, then what was going on in that area at that time that, like, were the Brits involved? Were their friends? Like, there's a lot of other questions that pop up.
Right.
So they made her everything.
They made her everything to avoid the main question of
which what seems was a little chicken, India, to be honest.
Yeah.
I also suspect, and I'm going to put this here because I didn't have time to do it in my article, I wonder if it was them sort of in the, because in the UK, and it was also on PBS, the specificity of Beecham House fell flat for a lot of British audiences, I think, because people felt it was way too much of, like, of India from an Indian point of view, which people didn't like.
Too specific.
Yeah.
That it didn't hit, whereas by picking the words that are the cutest
or familiar, because a lot of those words I've heard.
Could be.
When I went to Nepal, I was called DD by all the people when we were hiking. And so I was asking Trisha about that. And it means sister.
Yeah, it means sister, older sister.
But from a different language again, right? Mm-hmm.
And Didi is actually one of the most common things to just say to somebody you don't know out of respect if you're calling them or talking to them. So something like that is more conversational than it is when you are kind of specifying certain words that definitely come from a certain region. So that was something that was it threw me off because it was just all over the place there. But then when it came to like, when it came to just traditions and things, like there was so much that I did love when it came to like the haldi ceremony and how beautifully they showed that. Mm-hmm. And like that celebration of like before the wedding, putting the turmeric on the bride and just like it was so beautiful. And like they actually had played a song that was originally from a movie in the 2000s, a Bollywood movie called Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham. And it was one of the biggest hits of that era. And it was one of the most like emotional songs. And Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham, it means sometimes happy, sometimes sad. And they played it during that scene. And it was honest, like it put me to tears because it was just so perfect. And it just gave me so much nostalgia of like that moment and that movie and all that connection there. So that was something I thought that they did that was so lovely.
That's really neat. I had no idea.
Yeah, let's talk more about that Bollywood representation. Because like you were saying, like the whole eye thing when she was... The mm-hmm. hands were framing her eyes, like a really common Bollywood.
Yeah, there were a lot of Bollywood tropes that they wove into this season for sure. So like that one scene when Anthony and Kate were dancing and like the covering the rest of her face but only revealing the eyes, that's a very feminine Bollywood-esque scene where you just look at like the passion in somebody's eyes. Even like things such as like her fidgeting with the bangles and dropping the bangles and then running off. That is like one of those tropes in Bollywood movies that are just so common that it just shows passion and nervousness. And once you see something like that, you just, again, it's like those Bollywood fans hit that nostalgia. So there were so many pieces that they actually used that were Bollywood-esque that I feel like those who were South Asian would recognize right away.
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. That's exactly it.
Did they incorporate anything into that love triangle that was particularly Bollywood-esque, or... is it like more universally a love triangle?
I think a love triangle is usually pretty universal when it comes down to it.
We love a love triangle across the world. We do.
Yeah, but also like tradition and arranging marriages too, mm-hmm. when it comes to like mm-hmm. the Indian culture. So that piece I saw woven in quite a bit as well.
Well, and honestly, the ton is kind of arranging marriages every bit as much at that mm-hmm. time, especially.
It's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
I noticed, and I would like to know your thoughts, Trish, on the color palette from this season. Like, mm-hmm. overall, I felt like all the actors, all the characters got a glow up this season. Their hair was more complimentary and modern. Their makeup was a little more, you know, stellar and less of the time. And there were just, like, these really rich purples
the jewel and
oranges
tones.
And the yeah. jewels. And I just, like, I was drooling over every outfit, especially Kate's.
Yeah.
I just loved them.
Yeah, like the emerald dresses and just even the patterns that were on the Sharma's family's outfits were very Indian styled. And their jewelry, too.
I love the use of rose gold this
season. Oh, the rose gold. And even yeah. like the style of jewelry I found, they put a lot of traditional Indian jewelry such as chumkas, which are belled earrings that are Ooh. Very traditional. And they wore them in quite a few scenes, actually. So it was a really nice tie-in. And then, yeah, the color. And it's so nice because like when you watch Bridgertons, you know that each family kind of has their own set of colors that they wear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it is very recognizable, but I like they did a great job, you're right, about picking the colors. And yeah, glow up for real, season two.
Everybody's
no
hot.
More mutton chops.
Thank goodness.
I didn't mind the mutton chops. They reminded me that Anthony is spiky.
No, for it's funny if some people heard this, they would have vapors because you know costuming is always a hot button topic mm-hmm. when it comes to period dramas. Oh, yeah. But to me, I think this season they did a much better job of incorporating a different type of style palette than they did in season one, because I feel like season one was a little bit more of a mishmash of the Regency with the 1960s a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did not lean in as much to incorporating like African styling as I thought they would have with season one. But yeah, this season two, I just love seeing that, like, they went all the way in with incorporating jewelry, and
they become a little they became more comfortable with what they were going for.
Exactly. I think that's a big thing too. I hope that continues in maybe not so much in season three, because season three we're shifting focus a little bit, so we'll see how they
Not going in order, right? They've switched it up.
No, they switched it up, and I actually think it's a good thing they did.
Yes. Yeah, I agree, 100%.
We'll come back to that later at the end. That'll be like our last. We're going to talk about this for 2 hours.
Yeah.
any more thoughts? Like, let's go back to the whole wedding and what Kirsten brought up around how far they went in terms of letting. Because I felt like. And we were having chats about this in our members chat too, where it's like, well, it's not that big a deal. I'm like, no, you can't like marry even today. No. If your sister is like basically walking at the altar the aisle. And then you go and like marry her almost
in
husband.
Front of the queen.
Yeah. Like
the queen, she hosted the wedding.
She hosted the wedding. Like what? So it doesn't matter if it's a love match.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah. It stressed me out a lot. So
yeah, this like there is a scene earlier on that just reminded me of like the world that this show is set in, where it's the episode where Lady Danbury holds a soiree and it's all of Edwina's suitors and they're like doing bee poetry or whatever. Right.
Yes, I love that.
And, yes, and Anthony crashes, and Kate is of course enraged and tries to leave, and she like lightly bumps a footman or a servant, and the entire room gasps in sync and like looks at her. And it's the biggest, and like that was a scandal. So leaving someone at the altar, it's too far.
And then having that be the person that your sister marries after being like, I think it would have been better if it stopped before actually walking down the aisle.
Yes, even that, yeah.
And then we could have seen Kate and Anthony's wedding.
Right? Exactly.
Like, don't get me wrong, that wedding was gorgeous. But it wasn't the right one.
But I read an article saying they didn't want to do two weddings. And it was like, so why did you pick that one?
Right. Yeah.
And also, it's a romance series. Why can't we have all the weddings?
All the weddings. Yeah.
Very true.
To me, I'm wondering if that was sort of a COVID decision where it's like, okay, we can only... Because if you think about it, a lot of the locations Virginia uses are actual things in England. Like churches. They're using people's houses. They probably only had a certain amount of time in each location, especially with, you know, adding the whole bubble thing. And you gotta, like, you know, seal off a location. Yeah. Nobody else can go in. And it's like, you only got one shot to get that location in your thing. So you kind of have to prioritize. In the book, I would say, not for, like, spoiler purposes, the courtship kind of ended much earlier because Kate was, quote-unquote, compromised earlier on.
Interesting.
So like they're like little seduction kiss that other people saw that happened earlier in the story, and that's what forced the them to get married hastily. So like their wedding in the book was very quick, like just, you know, in front of priests, whatever, you know, to hide the scandal.
Okay.
Maybe they didn't want to do that because it's so similar to what happened in season one.
Exactly. Yeah. It is very similar happened.
I was gonna say, yeah, that really reminds me of their wedding.
So I think I can understand why they kind of dragged it out a little bit and made it more about, like, the family and the formality and the mess with, you know, with the inheritance and all that. That's what made, I think that's, they needed to change it because people who didn't watch, read the book would be like, wait, you're doing the same story twice?
Yeah.
I've seen this before.
Even if it was a different setup. And also, too, they cut out some stuff about Kate's earlier interactions with Anthony as well. Which, just sort of... It was kind of establishing their dynamic. And also, too, the other part of this is that the plot with Sienna last season kind of drags into this book. They cut that part out. Like, they had him, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like a... There's something
I'd forgotten all about her. Poor Sienna.
Yeah.
Am I right in recalling that, like, there isn't a lot of tension, like, because it happens earlier. Like, I was thinking that they did this because they needed to actually beef up some of the romantic tension for the series versus the book.
Sort of, because the thing is, a good chunk of Kate and Anthony's story is sort of like, we are married now, but, like, I don't want to, Anthony's like, I don't want to love you because of what happened with my father.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, so that father-son dynamic happened after the wedding.
Yeah.
And
similar again to last season.
Yeah, that's way too similar. Yeah.
Exactly. I can see, I know people are mad, but, like, you guys have to realize,
makes sense.
If this makes sense. Yes. You have to distinguish what's, even though these are tropes for the history era, like, you have to distinguish on screen, like, people's motivations.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wish it had stopped before, actually, at the altar.
Yes. I still feel like it went too far.
I also hate and love at the same time that the queen is sort of the deus ex machina who, like, waves her hand and is like, it's not a scandal, everyone, get over it. And it's like, I was like,
it's cute. Yeah. I like it, so you like it, okay?
I love that, but also that's super cheating.
Yeah,
it's super lazy.
But I loved the queen in this season so much.
But what is it? She's snorting.
Yeah. What do you think it is, Trisha?
It's not rockets, I can tell you that.
Yeah. And it's not sugar.
It's snuff. It's tobacco.
Yeah. Yeah.
People don't realize that women didn't smoke, like, pipes in this period. They use snuff.
Or cigarettes or anything. Yeah. Or cigars. They couldn't.
Or cigarettes. Yeah, they didn't. Not that it was the... Yeah, it was sort of like an etiquette thing. And also, it just, you know, people didn't like the smell. Like,
well, who does?
All those pretty clothes.
Also, that, like, delicate little spoon and sniff is quite elegant, honestly.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like Lady Danbury could, like, rock a cigar if they'd let her.
Oh, I'm sure she probably does. I loved the scene with King George though, and Edwina.
Oh, yeah.
That one moment of Edwina getting to be an actual character, I thought was just wonderful. And I'm like, where was she the whole first five episodes?
She was too busy being a doe in the woods.
Yeah.
And she was trying to shoot her.
Am I remembering that they are doing a spinoff with the Queen?
Yes,
like a prequel of sorts.
So
and they've cast the actress too. I feel like a couple people already. Yes,
yeah, they've casted a couple major.
Yeah, I heard about it. I think I even heard about it when the season was still fairly new, or maybe just right after I'd watched it.
Yeah, because
I was just gonna say I'd like to see that story and where it started, because I feel like there is a deep love story there, and then the sadness of what happened to him.
Yeah,
but there's an interesting thing though with history, which I'm sort of like, okay, this is. I'm not sure how they're going to address this or they're going to ignore it. We call it the Regency because of their son. Their son is absent.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Where is he?
Yeah, right?
Because there's a reason why he has to take over, because at a certain point, he's not, the king is not able to rule anymore.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Right.
So, yeah.
That is interesting. The queen keeps trying to marry off her nephew, the prince? Mm-hmm. Where is his actual son?
The German prince, though, right?
Yes. German prince, yeah. I mean, also, that kind of, you know, thing was kind of common as well, like, just cement power, but I think it does pose a question. Here's the other thing, too. The Tom's supposed to have scandals and stuff. He caused a lot of the scandals.
Right.
there's this really, if you, it's a blink and you miss it reference, like, Benedict and his art academy, like, one of the random side people that you're meant that he's like hanging out with. I'm like, oh, you were like a huge, I forgot his name now. I'm like, that's an Easter egg that you don't use at all.
Yet.
Yeah. Maybe it'll come out in Benedict's story.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's also, I feel like that's probably why they're pushing. They're probably at the, like, because I feel like the prince would be a good way to introduce him in that sense, too. Because at one point, he comes begging the queen for money. To fund his lavish lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Especially for more Danbury, Lady Danbury.
Yes. I loved her and Mama Bridgerton this season. Mm-hmm. Like when they're eavesdropping and then they like go down the stairs and they like grin at each other like they're 15 and they're on a sleepover.
And Eloise is just like, I want nothing to do with it. I'm not involved.
And the moment with the two of them during the wedding, there's just like, they have this great laugh together. It was just very natural. And, you know, Lady Danbury is kind of in a lot of sticky situations this season with the queen and sort of not being able to be her right-hand woman the way she's supposed to be. And I thought that was really fun for her to play out too.
That's also why I'm excited for prequel, because we get to see more of Violet. We get to see way more, because I think a lot of the reader people who didn't read the book understand like how deep that relationship went with her husband.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you saw some of it in the flashbacks, but like you don't understand, like they went through things. There's drama.
Stuff happened.
Stuff. There's a whole prequel series that people can go back and read, but it doesn't make sense if you haven't read all the books because they mention, you know.
So don't read it.
Don't read it until you finish everything
if you don't want
else.
Spoilers.
I will continue to be delightfully surprised.
There's also going to be an element of, like, real history in there, too, because they're going to have to talk about, like, what happened early on in the rain, and they're also... I'm also curious how they're going to handle the race thing as well. Even though they've established things in season one, but going back to the, like, how are they... That's going to be interesting to see how they play that out.
Yeah. I agree.
Because they set the stage for some of that in the first one and sort of open the door. I feel like they have to kind of carry through a little bit.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting to see, because the season kind of felt like a lot of people felt like it was a reversal in the sense that, like, okay, we're going back to this didn't really happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But future seasons might force them to have to be like, oh, wait, we have to address things.
I know that I haven't read the books, like I said, but a lot of people were really waiting for the Pall Mall scene. Yes. And I know that I loved it. It was so fun. My family is furiously competitive, and it kind of reminded of when we used to play croquet as kids. And I loved seeing these like really dressed up fancy people just kicking the crap out of a ball and a stick.
Yes.
And so I just, did it live up to your guys' expectation as fans of the book?
Yes and no. In the books, there was a lot more smack talk.
Oh.
And so in the show, it was more visual, and they had, you know, bits and pieces around other places, because of course it's really boring to just follow the ball around. And so they had like moments of it. But I loved it so much, and I loved the ending of the game too.
I also liked they incorporated part of the epilogue in like the very last scene.
Yes.
That was because there's an extended Pall Mall sequence there too. There is some changes because they deleted some spoilers out of the story.
Because
a lot of times they had to do this epilogue, the stuff in the epilogue. It's like, yep, they can't include that in here now. So it always happens like several years later or whatever. Like, so yeah, there's some spoiler people removed, but it was, I like the spirit of how how Kate and Anthony like don't care about anything else but themselves. It was so cute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. People were afraid that they were going to cut Pall Mall once they found out the cast changes, but it's such a huge part of, like, the character development. I don't think they weren't going to. I knew they also probably had to shoot around, like, restrictions of COVID, but, like, I think.
Yeah.
I knew they weren't going to not include it at all.
They couldn't not include it because there would be legit riots. Be
protests. Yeah. Sure. Which are not COVID friendly either.
No. I think it really helped solidify the family as a whole in a way that had been, you know, slowly built up in season one, but then just really like solidly, okay, now we know these characters and now we see how they interact. And it's not just lovey-dovey and competitive and like teasing type thing, but like they will literally, you know, murder each other.
Right, and the fencing kind of proved that too a little bit.
Yes, that's true.
Let's talk about the Featheringtons, because that was a pretty big plot point this season. Yeah. What were you thinking about Lady Featherington and Cousin Jack?
Oh, Cousin Jack.
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to remember if this part... Amanda, was that subplot in the book?
Them trying to gain the money somehow, I believe, was in the book. I just don't remember how much of it was in this specific book.
Yeah, I was trying to remember, and I haven't reread. I probably should, but I like how they built it out a little bit more. I actually liked Lady Featherington. I mean, not as a person, but as a character. Like, yeah. I enjoyed watching her scenes more this season than I did the first season, because she had more. I don't know, more character to her as opposed to just a, oh, I'm the mean mom type of a thing going mom. On. Yeah.
She has motivation.
Yeah.
Yes. And the way she does things, I don't always agree with, but like at the end when she was a mom first, I like sat up on the couch and pumped my fist and was like, Mama Featherington.
Yes. Yeah. She is one fierce mama.
Yes.
Yeah.
She really came through. Which I wasn't sure I was expecting, so I kind of enjoyed that. I like when they give you a little twist like that.
Little surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also think, a lot of the Featherington stuff was probably in her in book four, because that there's a large chunk of Penelope's story in that book, so I think they probably brought that ahead, which makes sense now that they've announced.
We know what the next season's going to be.
Yeah, now we know what the next season's going to be. They've announced it. It's basically Penelope centric right now, so it's a good thing that they brought that forward, because now it's like giving her it's giving her like her motivations now that, like, again, family survival is key for her, that they're broke, or the cousin Jack's I have to say though, like, I was surprised at how many people in this town fell for his lies about like about mines,
his Ponzi scheme.
A bunch of rich, dumb guys.
Yeah, everyone thinks they can get rich quick.
Yeah, and I'm like, Georgia? I'm like, of all the places to put a mine? Like,
but they don't know anything about it, right?
Yeah, like, they're just like, this is one of us. He's a member of our community. Why would he swindle us? That makes
no sense. Exactly. I think that's the part is, like, here's the, you know, Americas, they're so like fancy and exotic over there. Who knows what's going to be found in the earth? Look at all of these prizes that have been brought back over. Even though we lost the war several years ago, it's fine. You know, we're buddies now. Hey, let's take some of these riches that we can't find local anymore. And of course, this is one of our lords. Like, why would we not believe him?
Yeah, and that also, his whole thing about Georgia, I'm like, this also brings out the question, like, again, about the history. It's like, okay, so the British lost control of Georgia. How are they allowing, like, mines? And also, too, who is digging out that coal and whatever since slavery was outlawed?
Right.
So who's doing that right now? Like, again, like, I was poking holes in that story as a scene. I was like, okay,
Colin are both like, I doubt it.
Yeah.
And even Will was like, and I'm actually glad they brought back Will Mongrich.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
because I was nervous that they would like derail him as a character, because he's not really, but like, I'm glad that they brought him back for that.
Because
he kind of needs a character that's like a middle ground between the really wealthy folks and the really not so wealthy folks. And you could tell he was like, yeah, this sounds like a fraud.
Right.
Also, it looks like they're setting him up to be sort of like a central location and meeting place in future episodes by setting him up with his club. And now he's kind of like proved himself. So it feels like that he's going to be important going forward, especially that relationship between him and Colin. And also, poor Penelope, like, loses two key people, spoilers, at the end, like, very end in the last episode, which felt like it made so much sense to me when they said they were going to do book four first, because it's like, oh, you've, like, set destroyed the stage everything. Because you've basically ripped Penelope down.
Let's build her back up.
Yes.
Yeah, poor girl.
Poor Pen.
I
like Eloise, but, like, in that argument, I am team Pen all the way.
Yeah.
To me, with what I find interesting, what I think Britishers have a little bit of a hard time with, convincing people not to back Team Penelope, I think. A lot of people believe that Eloise, why did Penelope expose her business? I'm like, it's going to be very hard especially the non-readers, to understand. And also, people did not like Penelope from season one when she, you know, tells everybody about what we know about Marina, it's going to be very hard to convince non-readers to be okay about Penelope
having... With everything.
Yeah, it's going to be very hard to convince people. Because I feel like, also, people feel like Eloise is jilted because maybe she does have... People also think that Eloise is queer at some point, so like, there's going to be a lot of... how they go forward with that is going to be very interesting.
They're just friends, Amanda.
I think it'll be interesting because I feel like as someone who is, I have read the first three books now sort of as it's come up, but I don't feel particularly attached to the books, but many people do feel fairly attached to the books. And I think there might be some tension between what the non-book people want and what the book people want going forward. Yeah. Because what I want is not very book related. But I think, I'm curious to how they will balance that because they are expanding things and setting things up. Like Benedict's art is much more developed in this show than it is in the book.
Yeah.
So, which I love. I really like him as a character. And the second he winks at his brother when he's coming down the aisle, I'm
when he moos at Eloise. I feel like he stole a lot of scenes from me this season. When he gets like really high at that dinner.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Just like his timing and his comedy was on point this whole season.
Yeah. I'm excited to have another season where he's not the main character to really grow the fun side, like the informational learn more about the character before he's the main character and, you know, whatever happens.
Well, I feel like he doesn't know who he is. So how can you trap him in marriage yet?
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Also, too, I think they want him to graduate art school. That'd be fun, you know? Because now we know he's going to stay. He can graduate
art
school.
Get high for the ceremony.
We can see you graduate art school and then pursue his career and then have the, you know, whatever marriage work and thing he wants. But also, I think more importantly, they do need to slow down that track, too, because his love interest without... I'm going to describe it as a trope without really spoiling the story. His love interest is basically a Regency Cinderella.
Yep.
Oh, interesting.
The problem with that, though, if you start casting a folks of color in that story, it's going to become, why is she a slave? Why is she a servant? Just because she's insert ethnicity here.
Right. Yeah, that's a fair point.
It is. So I'm like, I'm glad they're probably going to take a step back. And also, if they decide to say that Benedict is bi, they're also going to be like, well, wait, why? He's not marrying a guy? You know? How does that work in Regency England with...
Yes.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of things they need to kind of figure out. Which you need time to
figure out.
They've
got some thinking to do.
They've got some thinking to do. And they could come back to drawing board. I have some ideas on casting for season three, but I haven't, like, really... I put it out in, like, one blog article, but I haven't, like...
I will put some links to Amanda's articles that she's done because you've written a bunch into the show notes.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I mentioned it. Because I actually mentioned it in different articles now at Bridgerton. So, like, my top choice right now for specific person for season three, I want to see Elizabeth Tan, who is. Most people may have seen her briefly in Emily in Paris.
Oh, interesting. Who is she in Emily in Paris?
She's got a minor role in there. Like, some side character.
What character do you want her to play, or is that a spoiler?
I want her to play Benedict's love interest.
Okay.
Why I think it could work is if you have somebody who is East Asian or Southeast Asian, if they spin the scenario off with her being Cinderella as a family debt situation versus outright slavery, I think with the culture it could work. It'd be a little bit harder. I think it'd be a little bit harder to spin it if she's black or if she's Latinx, I think. Because people just automatically assume it's some kind of, like, it's worse than it is.
Right.
Yeah. And also needed representation that is missing completely in Regency era productions and even just British television in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, East Asia is, like, a, kind of just a... where, like, there's not anything there. So, yeah.
I would love to see her as that. season four love interest. Like, that would be,
that'd be great.
Amazing.
And also, she doesn't have to be a teenager, so that's another good thing. Like, I don't think, because Sophie is, I believe, sorry, you might have cut that name.
What? Oh my god, it's all ruined.
Sorry.
The character.
The character! Sorry.
It's not like they tell me who's gonna love who right before the season starts.
Right. Every time. I know, right? Not like this won't be a press release anyway, but...
Right.
But basically, because again, reading the book at this point is probably not going to be helpful at all, because they're going to probably rechange the whole thing anyway. So
yeah, it'll just piss me off. So I'm just going to stick with my original plan.
Yeah, just
good idea.
Basically, whenever they rejigger it, it's going to end up having, if they can, they really need to get that, like, walking that line of, I think culturally it could work if they have it where it's a, if it's a clan issue or a family debt issue.
Right.
Did they tell us about once and then go into no detail whatsoever?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are people who can specialize in expertise in this, and I think it could work. I mean, in terms of, because also I'm also noticing, like, I've seen so many other period dramas, like, what is missing, and East Asia is a huge hole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, other than, because that isn't, because also, a lot of times people, like, a lot of times when they do mention Asia, it's like, East Asia is always a bunch of stereotypes.
I want to go back and talk about what the heck was Colin doing going visiting Maria.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. Mm-hmm. So.
Colin.
So awkward.
This is awkward as heck for me, too, as a book reader, because in this part of the story, Maria doesn't exist at all. She's right. Briefly mentioned in a later book as a, first of all, she's a Bridgerton cousin, not a Featherington relative.
Whoa, mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And her current husband, Sir Philip Crane, and all that, that's a later, far later story. So in this part of the book, she's not there at all. And I do believe they did bring her back to connect Colin's development of, like, who does he really want to be?
And potentially for future storylines that will not be spoiled. But I believe that it is definitely foundational development for future bits. And so that's why they had to have this hella awkward conversation and have that connection to lay some bricks down for the future buildings that they're going to build.
The other problem, though, is that they've also backed themselves into a corner because of how in the novel timeline is now completely divergent in terms of her character.
But also in the novel timeline, they're so messed up. The epilogues always throw me off because in the books, there's the epilogue that takes place like 10 years in the future.
Yeah.
And then the next book comes and it's always like, I could not build you a timeline of the books if I had like $1 million to sit down and that was the only thing I concentrated on. Like, it's such, like, you could tell. I love the writing. It's so much fun. It's, you know, candy. But Julia Quinn definitely, like, retroactively changed some things for the future books to make it make sense a little bit.
Because some of those epilogues were written after she initially published the books. So.
Right.
Oh, wild.
Yeah. So yeah, it's bananas. It's absolute bananas. But it works out. And so I think this is a way to solidify the story into a more sane timeline.
But I want to come back to Maria because the way she tells Colin off was super satisfying to me because it's like there is no reason why you show up at basically your ex-girlfriend's house after she's married and has two kids to make yourself feel better. Mm-hmm. And then she holds him to account for that because it's like, dude.
Yeah, I really like that too.
Unannounced too.
Yeah, well, and she's basically the only person that ever holds him to account.
Yep.
She's the only one that has ever stood up to him. Everyone else is just like, oh, Colin, you're so silly, running around, going to Greece. Look at you telling me stories about Greece. We're over it. And they leave, as opposed to, dude, talk about something else.
Where, dude, why are you even here?
Yeah.
And also,
go back to Greece.
Penelope.
Yeah.
Colin, Penelope.
I do appreciate that Marina would want to tell him off, but also he has no conception of, like, struggle or anything like that. Like,
yeah.
Because he's third, because again, he's number three, he doesn't have to deal with what Anthony is going through with, like, the fam holding the family together. He's not even a spare. Like, you figure Benedict got some of the, like, you know, learning how to be running the thing in place in case something bad happens to Anthony. Colin got none of that, clearly.
Colin is hashtag blessed.
Yeah. He's running around, wringing his hands, going, oh, I'm so wealthy, I can just sit around and wonder, what is my purpose? I'm going to go travel for a year. And you're just like, yeah, dude, get a job.
Yeah. I mean, to his credit, he looks into the whole Georgia thing.
He does.
Like, this is some bullshit.
He is a bit heroic.
He can just be like, oh, I have all this money, I'm just going to decide to invest it somewhere because I have nothing better to do with my time.
I mean, to be fair, at least he's not just drinking and gambling it away.
True.
But still, you know, low bar. Low bar.
I do appreciate, though, that whole swindling plot was very Vanity Fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which
yes.
I love.
I think it is time for us to go around and give our final thoughts. Let's start in reverse order and start with Kathy.
I have a feeling that this season is never going to be my favorite, but I'm going to appreciate it for the foundational layer it leads to the future. Like, finally, now Anthony can be less of a dick. Finally.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Hypothetically. Potentially. I feel like I loved the further development of the older generation of characters, the Queen, Lady Danbury, Mama Bridgerton, Lady Featherington, like all of that generation. I really loved their pieces in this. And I also feel it's going to be very similar to, like, it has offered all of the creative people that make the show validation for being able to do something new. So season one was very much, haha, look, it's Regency with bright colors. And now they're like, okay, what can we do to keep this going, to make it work? And look at the music, look at the dancing, look at, you know, all of these pieces. I feel like that, again, a foundational layer to continue the series to be stronger and stronger in the future. Let's just hope Netflix doesn't decide, season three, you're done.
Oh. Yeah, that would be annoying.
That would be horrible. We'd have to put on our own season.
I mean, we could fake it.
I'd like to see that, but I don't know if we have the budget. Kirsten.
We'll start a GoFundMe.
Yes. There we go.
My thoughts. So, if you want something with beautiful people and beautiful clothes and just better bangs this season, that this is season two, go for it.
Like hair bangs or
like
dramatic
the hair
bangs.
Yeah. Well, there was that too. Waka waka. But just the hair bangs were much better this season, I found.
Yes.
Much more flattering. I really loved the sort of longing desire, the eye contact in this season really got to me. And there were a lot of really great, intense speeches. Every time Anthony said, I'm a gentleman, I wanted to do a shot. So that was really fun. I did enjoy it. I don't know. I feel like the two seasons are too different for me to really sort of pick a favorite at this point. I would like to see more of the journey before I really settle in on any of choices like that. But it's frothy, romantic fun, and it's a little sexy and a little spicy. And who doesn't want that in their lives?
Truth.
Side note, I heard some people were disappointed with the less sex this season,
yeah.
Which makes sense for the slow burn, but also mm-hmm. COVID.
Yep.
That is all. That's all I'm going to say. It was still pretty good, but it was like, it was.
Yeah, it was definitely
sad.
Not
they
as
really
hot.
Like went out running out of the gate with the first season. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Trisha.
Yeah, you know, I didn't mind the slow burn. I felt the passion in quite a few scenes, and I liked that. But
well, I liked
overall,
it too, but I also like watching mm-hmm. sex scenes.
Yes, that too. So. And I think from the season one, you had a certain expectation of what would come in season two, and that from a sex point, that was missing. Because you had to wait all the way till the last episode to get some.
Yes.
So, but overall, I thought it was beautiful. I thought the language and the scripting was really well done. I loved the speeches. I think they did well overall when it came to just like incorporating culture and being really good with representation and building on the characters. And I mean, I'm a fan, so I will definitely be waiting for the next season.
For sure. Amanda.
I definitely liked season two more than season one. I have some questions to the historical advisor folks about how they're plotting things behind the scenes versus balancing romance plots. But I believe Bridgerton's plot's way to becoming a phenomenon. And I do hope that even for people who are disappointed by how the Sharmas were written on screen, I do hope that there's more South Asian representation in future dramas, and that we can even get a drama written by a South Asian person on screen. Again, that's not, you know, canceled by COVID, Beecham House. So yeah, mm-hmm. I'm definitely hopeful for the future with that. I think that's because I feel like no matter how much Bridgerton doesn't always get it right, I feel like it's gonna be the starting place for something better. So
yeah,
and this season in terms of the romance, I liked it when it went in a different direction. Even luck we have a season to talk about. Oh, we could be in a situation where we're still waiting for something.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Amanda and say I like this season better. I think I just really like Kate and Anthony better than Daphne and Simon. Also, the marital rape scene just gets me, and I just find like I struggle with even wanting to watch season one, whereas this one feels a little less fraught from that perspective. So yeah. I like that. But yeah, I maybe I'll come to your conclusion that they lack chemistry all the time, but I'm like, those little hand motions and the slow burn part of it and the serial killer lover gaze, I'm like,
I'm going to patent that phrase.
Right? But it's like, find you someone who stares that intensely at you.
And then check their references before you.
Yes.
Right.
Because is it the good serial killer look or the bad serial killer
look? It's really hard to know sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I am, well, you know, apparently we are waiting for two series now because we've got the prequel series and we've got season three. So I'm sure we will be back for both of those because I think these are super fun, enjoyable things to talk about. And clearly we've all watched them multiple times. So,
yes,
you know, that'll be good. So we will be back again. Thank you for joining me, Kathy.
Thank you, Director. As always, it is so much fun to do anything with you.
Thank you, Kirsten, for coming.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
And thank you, Trisha, for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And Amanda, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. I love talking with you all the time.
Until next time, stay safe, agents. Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network. If you are enjoying our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the Smooch Agency, you can become a member of the Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. Members can choose to support us and any other shows on the network, and you get extra perks like hanging out in the members-only Slack channel and bonus content such as our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. Thank you for listening. Your next mission will be coming to you soon.